gentlemen, and welcome to the Andy Finn Show. I'm Andy Finn, the Finn Man, and for the next hour, you're in Finland. Today is Monday, June 18th, 2007, and on this day in 1873, Susan B. Anthony, we named a dollar after her, a dollar coin that no one uses, she was fined $100, and do you know what she got fined for? She was trying to vote for the president of the United Snakes. And women were not allowed to vote for the president back then. With as many of them that are supporting Hillary now, I bet there's a lot of people on the right wish that women still didn't have the vote. Latest polls are out, and Hillary is doing very well among women, at least Democratic women. Anyway, anniversary of Susan B. Anthony being fined for trying to vote. It's also the birthday of Paul McCartney, Sir Paul, as he is known. Some interesting, before we get to the heavy-duty issues tonight, everything from Iraq to Hamas and Fatah, and the latest about the abuse at Abu Ghraib, a big bombshell drop today that only some news organizations are covering. I want to go to the lighter stuff. But I will tell you what we're going to talk about tonight. Once I get through the lighter stuff, we're going to talk about two fundamental cognitive processes. And I know that sounds boring at first, but it's not. We're going to talk about perspective and how the lenses we have on shape what we how we perceive things. And you know my story about 20%ers. And how it's the people on the extremes that can't see things straight, both on the far right and the far left. And then we're going to talk about selective attention and what the media chooses to cover, and in particular, what talk radio and what the cable news shows choose to cover. Because it's very different depending on whether the show leans to the right or leans to the left. You only get a partial picture if you listen to one side, which you would expect, but they don't even cover a lot of the stories if you're only listening to one side. Anyway, let's go to the lighter stuff first. And with that, what I want to start with is there's a piece in the Washington Post yesterday about how new homeowners are being given cluster mailboxes. So they're putting up these big developments, and you might have a $500,000 home or more, and you don't get a mailbox out front by your driveway, at the end of your driveway. You get, down at the end of the street, a cluster of mailboxes. And they aren't even real mailboxes like I have in my townhouse community. You get the kind of mailboxes you'd get in an apartment complex, kind of. A wall of mailboxes, locked. And I suppose the postman opens it up and puts them all in at once, or puts them in from the back somehow. But And the people that are moving into these developments are complaining about it. Now, that's not the developer doing this. The post office has a standard approach to these things, and new developments are ruled as getting these cluster mailboxes. And you know what it's for. It's to save time and money so that the postman doesn't have to ring twice. No, it doesn't have to spend twice as much time there. And what's interesting is the head of the Postal Workers Union objects to this and wants to give everybody separate mailboxes. Well, of course, it'll take more postal workers then. The union will be bigger. Now, what's interesting is that I read the arguments people have. These are people that have moved into these, let's say, $500,000 homes and say, we should have a mailbox right out front. They didn't realize, some of them, when they signed their contract, that they wouldn't get a mailbox. They just assumed they would, and they'd get individual delivery at the end of their driveway. And so they're complaining about it and saying, you know, I expected to have a mailbox at the end. And without it, they're saying it doesn't look right, and that it's less convenient. And they're even talking about, when I come home from work, I don't have a mailbox at the end of my driveway. Well, that's the time I think it'd be convenient to pick up your mail at the community mailboxes. It'd be on a Saturday when you're at home that you don't want to have to walk down to the end of the street to the community mailboxes. But what's interesting, the post office points out that these community mailboxes, the cluster boxes, are locked. And so no one else can get at your mail. From the time the postman puts it in, it is safe. No one can rifle through it. Nobody can steal anything. Even if you go away a couple of the days, your mail will be there. So it seems to me there's advantages to that. But what it comes down to is people's perspective. They are set in their ways. So they think the norm is to have a mailbox at the end of your street, and so they want one. And they also think that that beautifies the house, the yard, the property somehow, because from their perspective, that's what they're used to. What's interesting is that if you could imagine that most people had cluster mailboxes, just imagine that for the last 50 to 100 years, we had cluster mailboxes, and that's what most people had. They build a new development, and then the post office changed its policy and said, no, no, we're not going to do cluster mailboxes anymore. We have too many employees. We can't lay them off, so we're going to have individual delivery, and we're going to put a pole in your yard and a box on it. It won't be locked because the postman's going to have to get into each box, but you're going to get your mail right in your yard. So people say, well, it's more convenient, but it's an eyesore. People would be complaining about mailboxes in their yard if they weren't used to them. Anyway, that's all we need to say about that. The times they are changing, folks, you know, get used to it. What can I tell you? Secondly, Salman Rushdie's back in the news, not for publishing a new book. Iran has condemned Britain because Britain has decided to knight Salman Rushdie. And, of course, as you may remember, he went into hiding for about a decade after he published his book, The Satanic Verses, about Islam. It was a novel, but it was considered blasphemous because it didn't treat Islam with kid gloves. I think that's the thing that Americans have the hardest time wrapping their heads around, is how thin-skinned people are in the Muslim world about their faith. You know, here, I was raised Catholic, and people tell jokes about the Pope and Raquel Welch, people openly critique or criticize religious leaders, bishops. People tell jokes about the priest, the minister, and the rabbi that were fishing together, and there's variations on that. And nobody gets bent out of shape about it. They know that it's a joke. They know that it's not intended to be blasphemous to religion, right? That's just the way we are in this society. But boy, you start joking about religion in some other quarters of the world, and they'll hand your head to you. And I kind of mean that literally. Anyway, so Salman Rushdie didn't get assassinated, although there was a fatwa out on him, a death sentence. And in fact, it's been rescinded, as you may know. That was rescinded, so he can now travel in relative safety. Third thing, the movies that are out. You know, it's so amazing to me. I don't go to see a lot of films in the theater. The prices have gotten so high, and I just don't think most of them. I don't want to endorse most of them. But it's amazing to me the number of movies that we have that are sequels. The number one movie this week is the new Fantastic Four movie. Of course, that's a sequel. It's brand new. The number two movie is Ocean's 13. That is a sequel, the third one in the series. Pirates of the Caribbean is still on the list at number four and is one of the two highest grossing movies on the list, one of the three highest grossing. And, of course, that is the third Pirates of the Caribbean. The three highest on the list in the $275 to $325 million range, that means a very, very successful movie, are Pirates of the Caribbean, it's the third one of the series, Shrek, which is the third one of the series at number six, and Spider-Man 3, the third one of the series at number 10. Hostel is also a series, and Nancy Drew, although I think it's the first Nancy Drew movie, my guess is they'll make more of them, although not if it doesn't make more than $7 million, which is all it made in the first week. Anyway, so the movies, I can't get too excited about any of them at this point. A change here in the Washington area. We're going to get live music at our metro stops. Now, those of you that travel around the country know that in other subway systems, New York being prominent among them, there are musicians in the subways and on the streets, and they can play for change or bills, and they aren't hassled about it. I don't believe you need a vending license to play music on the street the way you do to sell hot dogs. Those are very, very expensive vending licenses in the food industry. But I think musicians can just set up anywhere. And I could be naive about that. It may be that in the subway system, you have to pay for your spot. In any case, the Metro's experimenting with this. So starting this week and going through September, there is going to be, there are specific bands or performers scheduled at specific Metro station stops, which is interesting. So they tell you where and when you can see certain people. So these are scheduled performances. It's a lot different than New York, where somebody just picks up a violin or a set of drums and starts playing. Anyway, a terrible innovation is coming, has come. We'll probably see more of it. For those of you who, like me, object to constantly being bombarded by advertisements, the two-second ad is upon us. Clear Channel calls them blinks, but these are ads on radio, and they are only 2 seconds long, which is just unbelievable to me, but that's how they are. And the first one, or one of the first ones, is something as simple as iced coffee at McDonald's, because they only get 2 seconds, right? And the principle is they play them between songs. So, you know, one song ends and they squeeze in something. So it only works with recognizable brands. You can't establish a brand name in 2 seconds. But if you already know Aflac, you could put Aflac in there in a quick 2 second ad. You could do, you know, AA, beep, beep, MCO. Anybody that's got a slogan, Snap, Crackle, Pop, something like that. Now, they've only been used in a couple of places, all right? And it's mostly on radio so far. But it's not clear how and whether or not they'll take off, how well they'll take off or how much they will. McDonald's has used them, as I mentioned, and Fox has used them in their promos. They've used Homer Simpson uttering his famous duh phrase, and then followed by the voiceover, tonight on Fox. And people know that means The Simpsons. So it'll be interesting to see if this actually catches on. But the two-second commercial is upon us. You know, we started with 60-second commercials mostly. And then they reduced them to 30 seconds because it seemed like a long time. And you don't need to spend all that money. You can do two 30-second commercials and spread them out is the principle. But then they went to 15-second commercials. And then 10-second commercials, and then 5-second even. And now we have 2-second commercials. And they're also billing them as nano commercials, which is not quite nano, but I understand what they're getting at. They would have called them micro commercials if nano had not been invented. Anyway, let's see. In the world of science, it turns out that Pluto is not just a dwarf planet, that is, it's not a real planet around the solar system anymore with the category of the others, but it's not even the largest planet that we have among the dwarf planets. Eris, which is in the Kuiper Belt, is larger. Okay, now, what's interesting is the reason they downgraded Pluto. You know, a lot of grammar school kids wrote into the National Academy of Sciences. It might have been the Astronomical Association or something like that. In any case, whoever it was that decided, I think it was the Astronomical Society, their scientists voted to downgrade Pluto to a dwarf planet. Kids wrote in and complained and said, oh, you can't do that to Pluto. And he's one of my favorite Disney characters, or wherever they thought the name came from. Of course, it came from the gods of old. But the reason they downgraded it is they suspect that as they look closer and closer at the asteroid belt and at any other bodies that are moving, this Kuiper Belt that moves in a wildly elliptical orbit around the Earth, that we may find other bodies as large or larger than Pluto. And you don't want to name them all planets. So in anticipation of finding more, they did away with it, which, frankly, makes some sense to me. And let's see, what else? Oh, yeah, this was an interesting piece. This was also in yesterday's Washington Post. You know, the Secret Service gives every buddy that they guard a code name. And so it points out that Barack Obama's code name is Renegade. Now, Obama is the most recent presidential candidate to get Secret Service protection. Only two of the Democrats have Secret Service protection. I don't think any of the Republicans do yet. You don't get it too early in the race. You have to show that you might actually get the presidency. And so it's too early for that usually. Now, there are two exceptions on the Democratic side. Hillary, because she's a former first lady, so she gets it automatically. And then Barack Obama got it because he was getting threats. I think there were some death threats, but there were other kinds of threats as well. Like we'll put a video on YouTube praising you or something like that. I'm amazed at how much press that video on YouTube has gotten. If you haven't seen it, it's billed as Obama Girl, and it's this sexy young thing, looks white or Hispanic, who says how much she likes Obama. I'm in love with Obama. I can't think of the line, but she writhes around a little bit, and supports Obama. And it's an indication of the fact that campaigns can no longer control the message as well as they could just 4 years ago because of things like YouTube, where people can make a video and post it. It wasn't one of the other campaigns that posted the ad about Hillary. There's a 1984 ad. If you remember the old Apple ad from the 1984 Super Bowl, I think it was attacking IBM. And it had a scene out of 1984 where all the automatron-type people were in black and white and facing a big screen with Big Brother on it. And that was supposed to be IBM. And this very sexy woman in hot pants comes in and swings a sledgehammer and crashes it through the screen and brings light to the masses and allows them to see. A takeoff on that was done with Hillary being Big Brother, and her campaign had no control over that. So just a kind of unusual or difficult issue to deal with. And we're going to take a break, but when we come back, we are going to talk about one more item in the light news, how people make things up, and then we're going to move on to the politics in the world today.
Richard B. Cheney swears that Pat lay in public like so much hot air. Insists he and Bush care, waits for the weapons, still thinks Iraq was a threat to the U.S. homeland. I can't understand all the Bush appointees. Where do they all come from? All the angry people. Where do they all belong? Rabbit and Coulter writing the words to a book that reflects a strange fear. Who would come near? Look at her whining, blaming opponents and damning up dubious foe. Is it for show? All the right-wing parrots. Where do they all come from? All the angry people, where do they all belong? Ah, look at all the angry people. Ah, look at all the angry people. Ambassador Bolton hates the UN, but now he is a part of it all. He's got some gall, push the divider, renominates right-wing judges, no change in his tone. And he's not alone, all